This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Gabriel Garcia Marquez was a Colombian writer and journalist best known for popularizing the form of magical realism. His work blends the fantastical with the real and political, and there's no better example of this than his seminal novel, 100 Years of Solitude. The book is considered by many to be the most influential piece of Spanish fiction since Don Quixote. The life and influence of Gabriel Garcia Marquez is documented in the film Gabo, The Creation of Gabriel Garcia Marquez, and I'm joined in the studio today by his private librarian, Ivan Granados, to talk about it. Ivan, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Tell us, you met Gabriel Garcia Marquez when you were a teenager. Tell us about meeting him.
Yes, it was great. I was a teenager, and it was the very first writer I ever met. So it was fantastic because he was a very warm person, accessible person.
Well, so tell us about what it means to be his private librarian. What did you do?
Well, it was a privilege because I share a very private space with him every day. And I'm sure no one else did that with that person, and he was a very special person. And my work in the first moment was about finding out the order of his books, because the books are according to his interest and his personal interest, his professional interest, and I start with understanding his mind.
Well, tell us about that. I mean, if we take a glimpse into his library, it's at least some window into his mind. He's certainly a writer who is well known for his breadth, not only his political insight and his sharp understanding of social justice, but the way he draws his characters so keenly. So there's a very personal connection people feel with Garcia Marquez, as well as his political insight. So it's a kind of genius. So we wonder, what does he read? What are the books in his library?
Well, also as a person with political view of the world, he made movies. He was a screenwriter when he came to Mexico. That was his plan when he arrived to Mexico, a screenwriter, because the industry was there. And so in the library you can find a lot of books about movies, history of cinema, and a lot of screens and the awards he won in Mexico. He won for one movie, the Mexican award is named Ariel. So he won one.
Award-winning film screenwriter as well. Well, take us back a bit. Let's find out more about his personal history. He was actually essentially raised by his grandparents, right? Tell us about them.
He always said that was the most powerful thing that ever happened to him, because he was connected to the Colombian past of the last century, the century before him. And his grandfather was a person with a very strong political view.
And a war veteran.
Uh-huh, mm-hmm. I guess. And his grandmother was the opposite, was the person always thinking in the meats and what will happen if I wear a pink hat, or what happened if I wear black in Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. Which is to say, not necessarily so concerned about what the neighbors will think about her wardrobe, but what the fates might think. She was very superstitious, right?
Absolutely. And the grandfather was there, not at all. So I think that's the moment when he merged that views of the war. The grandfathers with his political interest, and the grandmother with the magical view and the all the fears she had about everything.
And he starts out starts his career as a journalist. Tell us about his beginnings as a journalist.
Well, that's the tragical history of Colombia, because he went to Bogota to study. He was trying to be a lawyer, because that's the good thing to do in that moment. Mm-hmm. And Colombia, in that moment, began a civil war, and Bogota was absolutely destroyed. So he flew from that disaster to Cartagena, and he tried to continue his career as a lawyer, but he had to work because he hasn't the money to study and nothing else. So that's the way he started to be a writer, because he had to be hired.
Had to make a living, right? Didn't have the money to go to school anymore. Couldn't continue that. Needed to make a living, so he's writing as a journalist. And perhaps, fortunately for us, because he may have remained a journalist, but luckily for those of us who appreciate his literature, he got into serious trouble with the regime because of one of the series that he wrote. Am I right?
Yes, that's correct. That's the way Colombia is. Mm-hmm. No, Colombia not necessarily respect the talent. The problem that was that a ship sink in the Caribbean.
Yeah, there was a ship that sunk on its way from Florida, I think.
From Mobile, Florida to Cartagena.
Okay.
And everyone knew about that. One person survived, and everyone was talking with him. He was a star. He was a radio star. All the newspapers talk about him. But García Márquez took his time to perform a very long interview with him. So he write about all the details about what happened. And what happened, he find out in that moment, was they were bringing to Colombia illegal things. And the ship was very heavily loaded, and that's why they sink. And it was a military boat, of course, and that was the problem, that everyone knew about illegal thing made by the military state.
But they didn't want him to find out. That pretty much ends his career as a journalist. And he wasn't immediately successful as a novelist, right? His early work was rejected.
Yes. His very first novel, Leaf Storm, La Hojarasca, he presented that novel to the big editor in Argentina. It was the best printing house in the Hispanic world, named Lozada. And he not only rejected the novel, he write a note to him telling he may change his career and do anything else.
Famous rejection letters. Those are the ones
exactly.
You frame, right?
Yeah. But I think García Márquez rewrite that novel. He didn't quit, of course, but he had to think about what was wrong with that novel. And I think no one knows, because he didn't keep the manuscript. But I think one of the theories is he had to rewrite that novel, and that was the first novel. It's like a novel. It's a short novel. No, it's not like 100 Years of Solitude. It's a long novel of the Autumn of the Patriarch. It's a very long novel. The Leaf Storm is a very short novel.
100 Years of Solitude, of course, is best known novel and one that sold millions of copies all over the world. And I think this is the stunning thing about the book is how it appeals not only to the literary set for its profound grasp of literature and reflection of literature, but everyday folks love that he connected with people all over the world. What do you suppose it was about his writing? And it's profoundly political, too. I mean, it's not just a sort of an airport novel. What do you think it was about his writing that allowed him inroads into all of those communities, political, literary, and popular?
Well, it's a very complex question. I think his political interest is very clear in 100 Years of Solitude because it was an historic episode that no one talked about that. It was when the military army killed a lot of people defending the United Fruit Company interest. And no one talked about that. But his grandfather talked with Gabo about that, and he knew that. And he was, I think, waiting for the moment to talk about that, and he put that in the novel. And the other question is why in Norway or why in Japan or a person can feel that is talking about you? Mm-hmm. That's the question. Why writer you don't know he wrote in another place is talking to you? And because I don't know, I think it's because he was a very talented and a warm person, and he always tried to make contact with you in a profound way.
Well, you could certainly do that through his characters. They were profoundly real. They were palpable, and you know, you could feel and touch and smell. I mean, all of the senses were enlivened in his novels. And then this filter, this other cast of magical realism, things that couldn't possibly be real and yet embedded in the book. And he obviously didn't create the style. It was one that, but certainly one that he made very popular. He reflected on that and the power of magical realism, particularly in repressed states, the power of that to inflame imaginations when political options seemed at a dead end. Can you tell us about his thoughts on that?
Well, I think the magical realism was the life of his grandmother. No, when we start to write 100 Years of Solitude, I think he was thinking in how her grandmother told him the fantastic stories with no problem.
Mm-hmm.
The grandmother never think about he will believe me or is that can everyone believe that?
Right.
No, she told the stories like that, and that was the story. So I think that was the lesson he learned about with his.
Yeah, and what a powerful mechanism that is for allowing one to imagine other ways out when the political means seem impossible. But interestingly enough, he is certainly one who is outspoken against dictators, totalitarian governments, authoritarian governments of all kinds, with one exception, and that is Fidel Castro, with whom he maintained a strong friendship through his whole life. Fidel Castro, no friend to social justice, certainly, and yet, how would you explain that, his relationship with Castro?
Well, I read a piece of made by John Lee Anderson, this journalist, and he was thinking about that, why they clicked like that. And he finds out a lot of common interest, a lot of common histories, and because they both are people from the Caribbean, they both are sensitive to the social problems, and Well,
yeah, and I think in some ways Castro is a more complicated character than a Pinochet, for instance. I mean, if you think about a man who is Castro, on the one hand, committed to social justice when it comes to education, when it comes to medicine, making sure that people are at least cared for. On the other hand, his treatment of dissidents, any kind of political dissent, is utterly repressive and reprehensible. It's a little so there's a complication there that may not be always true of other authoritarians who care little about what happens to their people.
Well, that was what ended the boom movement. The problem with the dissident. What will they do about that? Because it was one person, the very first person named Padilla. The Caso Padilla is that episode, and they want to talk with Fidel about that. No, you can do a revolution and repress the intellectual person and the writers. And that was the problem. That was the difference between Vargas Llosa, Cortázar, and García Márquez, because all of them had a different points of view of what to do, what not to do about that. And that was the end of an very important literary moment.
What about his impact? Well, let's talk about his legacy, Gabriel García Márquez, in terms of his legacy as a writer. What is it? How important is he to all of us?
Well, I think he will continue to be a bestseller, a long seller, and I think we will have the need of rereading his books after his death, because it's a different, well, for me that I knew him, it's a different relation with his books after his death. And I'm doing that. I'm reading again his short novels, his short histories in this moment, and his novels. He made a lot of novels, more than one,
yeah.
And his legacy, well, in this moment in Colombia is happening something very important. Is the ending of the civil war with an left-wing army guerrilla.
Right.
And everyone in Colombia is talking about the big deal that he didn't live in peace in Colombia. He died 2 years, 3 years before that moment, this historical moment, and he always tried to help that happened. So, I mean, that's part of his legacy. He tried to do something he couldn't, because it was a war. But in this moment, everyone is talking about how happy will be Gabo if he can see that.
Iván Granados, thank you so much for talking with
us. Thank you for inviting me.
Iván Granados is the private librarian of Gabriel García Márquez. The film Gabo, the creation of Gabriel García Márquez, was screened as part of the North Carolina Latin American Film Festival that runs through October 9th. We have details at our website, stateofthings.org. The theme of this year's Latin American Film Festival is films from Peru and Colombia. There's more of the State of Things just ahead. Stay tuned.